Okay, all right, let's get started. Okay, this is our third week, and I'm going to just mention this, but we're not going to discuss it till next week. It's hydroponics. The Torah says that in the Shemitah year, that's from last Rosh Hashanah to this Rosh Hashanah, we may not engage in any work in the land of Israel. The entire land is to be treated as if though it's Shabbos. So the Torah says not to work the land of Israel. If we're growing crops on water, is that considered the land or not? So we'll discuss that as a possible way around as we are the laws of Shemitah, as there are some other approaches, but that's for next week. There's Mechira, selling the land to a Gentile. There's something called Otzer Beis Din, where we basically give over the land to like a corporate entity that I'm not working my land. I'm working the land of the Beit Din, which is similar in scope to what a prosbul is in order to collect a loan during a Shemitah year or after a Shemitah year. There's also the possibility of buying crops from a Gentile or from the from outside of Israel. And hydroponics might be another possible etza to get your fruits and vegetables, especially vegetables that you might not otherwise be able to get. Okay, so that next week we're talking about these five heterim, these five ways to get your food without worrying about the problems of Shemitah. And now some of these would obviate the first thing we're going to discuss now, which is Kedushas Shviyas. Okay, Kedushas Shviyas means that the crops in Israel in the Shemitah year bear an element of holiness that precludes us from two types of behavior. One, we can't waste it. I've given you the food la'achla, so la'achla v'lo la'hefseid. And two, la'achla v'lo l'schora. You have to use it for food, but not for business transactions. In other words, you're a farmer with 100 acres of land. In all other years, you usually collect all of that, and you harvest all of what the land produces, and you make of that some business. That's what you earn your living. So on that harvest, you work 10 months a year making great investments in your land, and for 2 months you bring in a harvest, you expect to make your money back. But you can't do that in the Shemitah year. So that's called la'ochla v'lo l'schora, to eat but not to make business, and la'ochla v'lo l'hefseid, to eat but not to waste it. An example would be that you can't use Shemitah wine for Havdalah. Why not? Because what do we tend to do with the wine of Havdalah? We pour it over the top of the cup, and it's a bracha on the plate. We usually pour Havdalah, not like Kiddush, but Havdalah. The Gemara says that if you're very generous with your Havdalah, then it's a bracha for the whole rest of the week. And that's wasting, right? Especially when people usually extinguish the Havdalah candle in the wine, wasting that wine. Now, the rest of the year, right, there's baltashkas, but that's just a little bit. But when it comes to Shemitah, you're not allowed to waste even a speck of Shemitah products because it's holy.
It's
also even a tiny bit is forbidden to waste. Okay, for this reason, the poskim say not to use Shemitah wine for the Seder either, because of the Seder we tend to dip your finger and for the 16 times where you wine towards the middle of the Seder. So that's also wasting. Now, again, if it's wasting for Shemitah, it's wasting the rest of it. We shouldn't be wasteful of anything. But there's a tiny bit. It's such a small amount that, all right, the custom is to spill a little wine. But if it's Shemitah wine, we can't waste even a tiny bit. So that's the Kedushas Shviyas. So now, what we have to do this week is to learn some concepts that relate to this Kedusha and then apply it next week to the five heterim, the het mechira, selling the crops to a Gentile, the oats are based in, to have the community own it. It's not my crops, it's the community that owns it, right? Nochri sold it to a Gentile. The land belongs to a Gentile. Or I got the crops from Jordan, or I got the crops from outside of Israel. Or hydroponics, possibly. Is hydroponics? Hydroponics is that the crops grew in the water.
Okay.
You grew the lettuce, and usually it's done with seedlings, like alfalfa sprouts. But they're growing fruits in hydroponics. So water is not land, is it? So if it says don't work the land in the Shemitah year, can I get that crop, those crops from water? So the question is, if I employ these modes of getting fruit and fruits and vegetables, what the land produces in the Shemitah year, does it maintain that Shemitah sanctity? Right? Can I then engage in commerce with it? Right? You're not allowed to do those two things with Shemitah crops. But if I have, you know, in Gush Katif, they had significant hydroponics. They left it behind, and they quickly went and people came in and destroyed all of it. But it was significant hydroponics. Israel was at the head of the whole world's hydroponics technology, and most of it was in Gush Katif. Do such crops maintain Kedusha Shvius? You would think not, if the whole point is that this now skirts the Shemitah problems that exist when you have a big issue. Maybe it skirts the Kedusha Shvius as well, right? Well, we probably have heard that in the Shemitah year in Israel, you have to have the special pach, the special right. basket. There's a right. picture of here. It says here. It's on page 135. You have this special path for you. Page 135 at the bottom. It looks like a child's sand pail, right? What are you putting in that 135? What are you putting in that pail? Is things that you would normally throw out from your plate, right? So you have to put it in this pail until it rots to the point that even an animal will need it. Right? Because Shemitah products are actually, it does maintain some degree of holiness, but it does not maintain the degree of holiness as some other holy foods like Truma, Bikurim, which the Gemara says you're not allowed to feed to animals. Some holy foods can only be eaten, consumed by a human being, but not animals. But the Torah expressly says, I have given you the Shemitah year for you and your animals. Of course, yeah. We'll see another point today about Biur, which is dependent on animals. We'll see what that's about. I'm going to discuss that at the end of today's class. So peels have to go in there, right? Peels that you normally would not eat. The question is, I can picture the difference between an apple peel and an orange peel. Let's see, banana in a second. Yeah, but an apple peel, I consider, yeah, many people yeah. don't even eat the peel, don't right. even peel an apple. They just eat the apple with the peel. But no one eats the orange with the peel, right? But there is the oranges, is some piece in the middle here, because orange peels are used to make marmalade and other jams. And so that is quite usable and edible.
Right.
I'm sure you'll find animals that would be very happy to eat orange peels and lemon peels, right? The banana peel may go one step further. I'm sure elephants will eat banana peels.
Also,
if you have goats too. I'm sure if you have a pet elephant, so you feed them your banana peels. But banana peels certainly are usually thrown out.
Never heard of
them. Right?
Yeah, I've never heard of anybody making them.
Yeah. The orange banana peels are usually thrown out. So something that's usually thrown out, you still need to put it in this pach, if it's like the whole fresh banana peel. But you have to wait till it, you know, you're going to say till it becomes so spoiled that even an animal would need it. Most animals won't need a banana peel either. But if you do, you still, the custom is you can see what's in this pachet. I don't know what it really looks like. It looks like it's things in plastic bags there. But the point being that you can't, when especially when someone's doing dishes, it's usually kept in the sink, right? And you've had there's a Shemitah falafel or something. So the best thing to do is like you do with your chametz and their Pesach, consume it all. So there's nothing to throw out at all. Right, I remember being very firm about it. I would mamish lap up everything with a piece of bread, you know, every bit of sauce, everything. Mm-hmm. You don't know where the sauce came from. Ketchup, it came. So the ketchup came from a tomato, and it's made. So you know, everyone has their own derech of this. But so that's that. Achlav alola hefseid. Another thing, the definition of what's considered hefseid, which means a waste, you're wasting Shemitah, holy Shemitah products. It doesn't have the holiness of trumas and maaseros and bikurim because that can't even be consumed by an animal, but it can't go to waste. So the benchmark of what is considered a waste may be subjective. Something that the Gemara considered a waste may not be wasteful for us. The best example would be squeezing the fruit, squeezing or mashing the fruit. Right, it has to be a normal way of eating this. And as we know, in many areas of halacha, the normal way of eating something can change with time. The Mishnah Berurah says that eating raw carrots, right, the bracha is shakol nevidvar.
I missed that.
Let me explain. when we eat a fruit, we should be specific with its blessing.
Okay.
A carrot is a bread priha adama. It grows from the ground. We should say, I'm eating a fruit from the ground. But if you eat it in an abnormal way, the bracha changes to shahako.
How?
So how is eating a raw carrot abnormal? Because in 1930, when the Mishnah Berurah wrote this, in 1920, no one ate raw carrots.
Why?
Because they didn't.
No one ate raw vegetables.
He established before writing such a halacha. He went around the world. He said, no one in the world eats raw carrots. Now, I remember when no one ate raw broccoli or raw cauliflower, but now they do. You see it in fancy places, and they serve because it has, you can cook out the nutrients from these things, and they recognize this now. So now more people are putting it in a dip, and they're eating raw broccoli. The bracha of raw broccoli is definitely a bread for Adama. Right? Because when something is normally eating cooked and you eat it raw, the bracha changes. If it's normally eaten raw and you eat it cooked, the bracha changes. The Gemara finds a little more difficulty on what are those examples. But still, the if you eat a raw potato, it's not, no one says to make a prepared dhamma on that. Okay, so what I'm trying to show is that that the halacha is well aware of eating how something might change according to Jewish law, depending on eating it in the normal way or the abnormal way. Let me say one further. Hilchos Shabbos. The Gemara says that if you squeeze lemons or oranges or pomegranates into a cup, you don't violate Shabbos. Why? Because it's such a shinui. It's such an abnormal thing to do. It doesn't constitute preparation of food on Shabbos. No one eats orange juices from an orange. That's from the time of the Gemara. So the Gemara in Maseches Shabbos says something consistent with this. You're not allowed to squeeze an orange on in a Shemitah year. Tell me why not. Because it's a hefseid. You're wasting the orange. In fact, the Gemara in Maseches Shabbos only allows squeezing two fruits in Israel, the grape and the olive.
If you're squeezing orange, right?
In the time of the Gemara, no one grew oranges for their juice. So to do that, because hey, you know what? I'm gonna sell some new this product. You know, the Caesar loves it. Why can't I sell it for the masses? Yeah, but you know, no one's gonna grow it for that. Now they do. So that changes. Of course, now you can. There are whole farms that only grow oranges for the squeeze.
Like, you know, little shops.
Yeah. It's a very common thing. So today, you're allowed to do something you couldn't do maybe even 100 years ago or certainly 2,000 years ago.
Regarding
That's another example where the Achlav Lulahav said may change.
So when it brought the animal and eat it, you know, the vegetables that you have in that pot, can you then use it for compost on the field?
You have to be careful because I was working with Latin.
Assuming that.
Yeah, possibly, yeah. To try to be as economically productive as possible on that.
It would be inconsistent. People have compost crops sometimes out, like worms or something, to expedite the deterioration of the product. I assume you can't do that with.
And because unless it's already reached the stage, then you can throw it out. Okay, so the Kedushas Shvius, meaning the holiness of this food. It's not as holy as the tithes because an animal can't eat the tithes, but an animal can eat this. But it has some other aspects that make it even holier than those foods. Okay, because if I sell holy food that I shouldn't have, I'm not allowed to sell holy foods, but I did anyway, right? You're not allowed to sell chametz during Pesach, but I did anyway. I sold it, right? So the sale is considered
valid.
I mean, I'll give an example.
I wasn't supposed to do it.
Not everything I'm not supposed to do is considered invalid. Some it's valid. For instance, if I have $1 million of chametz, whatever it is, I have these very valuable biscuits, and then I have a whole storehouse of them, The benchmark of whether you can own something is whether you can mekadesh a woman with it, whether you can make hektish. Can I give it to the woman as a gift for marriage? Usually today we give a ring, but it has to be anything of value. So if on Chol HaMoed Pesach, during Pesach, I give this woman $1 million worth of chametz, this is now yours if you agree to marry me. Right? Is she married?
But you haven't sold it. Right?
No, I'm giving her the actual physical chametz.
Right. Yeah.
The answer is?
She wouldn't marry.
She would not be married.
Well, because
I haven't given her anything. I haven't given her anything of value. This $1 million of chametz has no value during Pesach for you. Just enough to be over and body rabbi, let's say. Like a Borbish and Sarabim. But by giving her this $1 million worth of chametz during Pesach, you haven't given her a cent.
Okay. What if she thinks that?
Doesn't matter. You tricked her. You cheated her. Even if she doesn't even realize it's Pesach, I don't know. But you haven't given her anything of value. Now, if you sold that chametz, right? You sold that chametz to a Gentile or even a Jew. You sold the chametz and he gave you $1 million in your hand. Right. He gave you a diamond ring. He gave you a ring, and you gave that ring to her. And said, you married, betrothed me based on, now you're not supposed to get married on Chol HaMoed, but this guy's the least of this problem. is Ein Marvin Simcha B'Simcha. But if you sold your chametz during Pesach, illegally, you're not supposed to, you're not allowed to, but he did, right? And now he exchanged the chametz for a ring, and he gave her the ring, they are married. Okay, because chametz does not extend itself to the sale. But Shemitah does. Okay, Shemitah does. If I have a crate of Shemitah oranges that has the holiness of Shemitah imbued in them, if I have a crate of Shemitah oranges and I exchange them for a crate of herring, even something that doesn't grow from the ground, by the way, food product, if I exchange the Shemitah oranges for Shemitah herring.
Right.
For non-Shemitah herring.
I was just saying non-Shemitah.
For herring. No such thing as Shemitah. For herring. Now the herring has the rules of Shemitah on it. I can't waste it. I can't do business with it. I can't, you know, I have to make sure that if I have to put it in the pot, the animals, okay? Even though it didn't grow from the ground.
Right.
Yeah, but you inflicted the Kedusha Shvius on it by exchanging it, by making a Shemitah transaction with it. Everyone see? Okay. All right. So that's unique to Shemitah besides Avodah Zarah and Hekdesh. But it's based on a specific description of Shemitah in the Torah that gives it this standard. Okay. If you barter or you exchange Shemitah upon money. Let's say I sell you this crate of Shemitah oranges for $20. What I buy with this $20, if I buy food with this $20, Shemitah Kedusha Shvius goes on. Okay? So that's why it's so important to make sure that Shemitah products only stay in the hands of people who are going to observe these laws.
Oh, right.
You have to be very careful where you're buying any food in Israel, that they're not lenient or recalcitrant regarding Shemitah Kedusha Shvius. Okay.
So selling it to a non-Jew wouldn't deprive it of its, wouldn't strip it of it.
That's a dispute in the Mefarshim. We would say at least it's rabbinically prohibited. Okay. So therefore, the peels, so you have three different types of peels. Apple peel, everybody agrees. Kedusha Shvius. Orange peel, okay. Some people use it for food, for jams and things. So they're the sort of middle ground. And the banana peel, more poskim are likely to allow it to be to be thrown right into the pach. But even there, you know, again, everybody has a different, perhaps a different standard. Okay. Is there a mitzvah to eat Shemitah products? So here, you know, almost like everything else in this discussion, in these discussions here, according to some Mefarshim, it's actually a positive thing to do, to try to get your hands, if you're in Israel this year, to try to eat Kedusha Shvius in a state of Kedusha, a state of make sure you're not, in other words, don't waste it, etc., etc. The Gemara says something interesting. It says, try to figure out why this is so. Gemara says, don't use oil of Shemitah, right, with peppers and onions of Truma.
Of what?
Truma. Truma is the Kohen's holy food.
Okay.
Now, Shemitah and Truma have different levels of stringency. I told you them before. Truma, you can't feed to an animal. Shvius, you can. Right? Truma does not grab onto its value. Shemitah does, right? Truma should also not be wasted, but it doesn't have the standard that Shemitah has on this. You don't see Kohanim with Truma pachs, right? We don't need Truma anymore today, but there is something that, you know, when you burn challah, you have to make it burnt to the point that an animal would need it. Otherwise, it has some degree of sanctity to it. And you burn the, which is, you know, pull off when you bake chal. So on this, when the Gemara says, don't cook truma, peppers, and onions in Shemitah oil, right? So what's, what would be wrong with that? So it's a little umdus. There could be two different reasons why not to do this. Because I'm not supposed to waste either of these,
right.
But I might be wasting the Shemitah oil by mixing it with Truma products, because Truma has a higher high threshold of impurity. I mean, you're not allowed to make Truma impure. How does Truma become impure? An insect touches it. A death-defiled person touches it. Shemitah does not have that standard. Shemitah can be tummy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you can have Shemitah can become impure. It's for that aspect. It's holy. Very interesting. Each issue, and it's based on usually Seris HaKosov, biblical references,
right.
And each one has their own standard.
So you
okay.
Have- wasting the oil.
You'll end up wasting the Shemitah oil because it'll have a, now that you cooked peppers in it, truma peppers in it, and now it has a higher threshold for maintaining its ritual purity.
It won't be able to be consumed because now
it may have to waste it because now it has the truma standard to it.
It could become tamei, which is
good. Now, can you figure out the opposite? Maybe you shouldn't do this because the truma. So because it's possible that the Shemitah product is imposing a higher level of sanctity on the Truma product. So I didn't explain what this is yet, and now I'm using this as a segue to move into this discussion. Okay, I just gave you an example of where the Truma product imposes a higher level of sanctity on the Shemitah product because of its susceptibility to impurity, which Shemitah doesn't have. But Shemitah also has another concept, and it's very important to know this, for the year after Shemitah. Okay, listen to this. You probably have not heard this before, or you heard it 7 years ago, and it's sort of... So it's when people hear this, they say, I didn't know that this we have to worry about this too. Okay. It doesn't really apply to too many items that grow from the ground because most items that grow from the ground, you can't store it for too long. If you have a Shemitah orange in your house, you're going to finish it in 2 weeks. You're not going to store it for 6 months. Mm-hmm. But here's the rule. If you do have a Shemitah product, whether it's outside of Israel or in Israel, you must consume it before that. That's a complicated point. Before that particular food is no longer available in the fields for animals. Now, Israel is a small land. It's not, how long, there's a season for dates in Israel. There's a season for wheat in Israel. It doesn't grow too often. In America, you can grow wheat in different places in the United States of America 12 months a year. Okay. So, but in Israel, it's a pretty small land, right? Even for such a small land, you can see pictures all four seasons. You can go skiing on the same day that you can go, in 80-degree weather. You can't do that in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. A day where you can go swimming off the coast of New Jersey, you can't go skiing anywhere unless you're a polar bear. So, but in Israel, you do have this is known as bi'ur, like bi'ur chametz, like the strong chametz before Pesach. There's something called bi'ur shemitah. Why? Because this is basically the point, is that all fields in Israel belong to everybody. You don't own your land in the shemitah year. I can go into your backyard and take fruit from your tree. I can't go into your property and set up a tent, or live there, or play baseball there. But I do have the right to enter your land. You
can, all the time, or not
the whole Shemitah year, just the whole year of Shemitah, from Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah. In fact, you're not allowed to fence in your property. It's called Nishmar. Nishmar is a big no-no for Shemitah. You have to have a way for people to get in. The same way you have to have to get into, take like a chikhan peah, to take the corner of the field, to take the gleanings that are dropped by the workers. What good are those laws if the poor people don't have access into your field? What good is Shemitah to level the playing field between the people who own land and the people who don't, if the people who don't own land don't have access to the land? So all the land in Israel belongs to everybody, right? It's just that I'm not allowed to use my land for schora, for commerce. Well, you're not either. A fine situation that would be if you can do in my land what I can't do in my land. Right? So maybe some unscrupulous people will start to hoard Shemitah products.
I was going to say that.
They'll go to 20 different lands and take take whatever they can for the time being. And there and even under the spirit of the law, because I can go in your land and take a small amount of fruit. I'm not taking it to do commerce. I'm not allowed to. Love the little schora. But I may take it in order to, I'll take 10 apples from 40 different fields and I'll have apples for the whole year. No, that's also not the spirit of Shemitah. So what does the halacha say? When this food is no longer available in the fields for animals, you have to be rid of these foods. You really can't hoard it then. There's no point in taking 4,000 apples with food if you only have time to eat 30 of them. Right. Okay, so this is assuming that people have goodwill and they want to keep the halacha. If someone wants to skirt the halacha, there are plenty of ways to do it.
But the question is that if I don't own, okay, I'm not on your land. If you live on your land, I can come over your land and take apples.
Not only that, the Gemara says you shouldn't say thank you to me when you take them.
Why?
Because it's God's. You okay. Thank God. Okay. Thank you, God, for making the Shemitah rule. In the end, the Gemara says, yeah, okay, spread goodwill and thank the owner of the property. But really, it's God that gets the gratitude. Thank you for establishing this beautiful halacha that it levels out the playing field between everybody. Okay?
Should you have enough common sense and not taking everything?
Of course, yes. Look, when it comes to Leket Shikach and Peah, as the gleanings, people leave behind with the story of Ruth, where she went for the gleanings, and or the Peah, the corner of the field that's left for the poor, there is a benchmark for that. You can't take that unless you have more than a certain amount of money.
Right.
Again, we're not talking about people who want to trick the system and lie. If you want to get on food stamps, even though you have lots of money, there might be ways to do that. Mm-hmm. We're talking about people of goodwill who don't want to take pay and let it chick if they don't deserve it. Right? My Baba Mitzia, can I declare myself impoverished and say all my money is hefker so that I can at least acquire it for a different poor person?
Oh,
I can't acquire it for myself, but I want to acquire it for a different poor person. So okay, but still, we're talking about people of goodwill who don't want to be in violation. But you see, in the Shemitah year, it's not a question of who's poor. The land doesn't belong to anybody. For Leket Shikach and Peah, that's a question of who's deserving.
Everyone, regardless of the number of
status. Right, and when we talk about giving Maaser Rishon to a Levi or giving too much of tithes for the Kohen, that's you can give it to a rich Levi too, in order to because when it comes to those tithes, my crops need to be untithed. I have to get rid of the tithe. I mean, you know what I mean by that? Tithe is really what I mean is that I need to tithe them so that I can eat my crops. If I don't tithe them, I'm not allowed to eat myself. Okay, let's get back to the Shemitah issue. Is that after the Shemitah year is over, and Israel puts out pamphlets, I think I mentioned this last week, Israel puts out pamphlets that tell you when are the figs finished in Israel? When are the olives finished in Israel? They give you 400 items.
Is that during the Shemitah year or
the year after the Shemitah year?
So during the Shemitah year, let's say the fig season is February.
Yes, so when that season ends, usually it's like December, January, February, and they have to tell you if you have the food that's most negative, so this is probably pickles, because pickles are pickled.
Right? Cucumber.
Right? Cucumber. They're pickled cucumbers. So you can keep those pickles in or especially canned goods.
Yeah, right.
You have canned corn that grew during the Shemitah year, and you can keep it in your closet for 2 years. And that's a big no-no. Okay. Now, most products that will say on it, this is Shemitah, if they want observant Jews to buy it, I guess, whatever head that we'll learn next week they employ, they'll tell you on it, make sure to consume this by such and such a date. Okay. Now, what happens if you pass that date? So, and I'll tell you what is the custom in Israel. The Rambam is the most stringent on this. Rambam considers this rule of bitur regarding Shemitah products to be like bir chametz. Torah says to burn your chametz. The Torah says to burn your Shemitah products. Don't hoard them. You took too much, you got to burn them. This is a Ganesh Talfem. It's not getting you anywhere. So don't do it next time. Okay, you have to destroy it from the world. You have to burn it. It's called biur. The problem with this Rambam is that it seems to be sorely contradicted by a Mefarish. Here's the problem. It's not in the Yerushalmi and it's not in the Talmud Bavli. It's a Tosefta.
Oh.
A Tosefta that's not put down in either Gemara.
Mm-hmm.
Not in the Sechah Shvius and not in the Bavli. Gemara is the end of Sukkah. It talks about using Shemitah Esrogim, the Gemara in Pesachim, it talks about Makom Shenagu, and it's about Biur. You go to one place with a Biur where in that land cantaloupes are no longer grow, so I have to get rid of cantaloupes. But where I live, cantaloupes still grow, so it could be different elements, even within the land of Israel.
Right.
So in all the Bavli Gemaras, there's no reference to what you're supposed to do with the crops that passed the beer date. What are you supposed to do? Okay, the beer date is next Thursday. What am I supposed to do with it? Right, it's not next Thursday because that's before Shemitah is over. But in 6 weeks is the beer date. What am I supposed to do with my fruits?
What did Tosefta say?
So Tosefta has the following. Tosefta says that what you should do with these, Rabbi Yehuda says, what you should do with these crops is give it to a poor person.
To a who?
A poor person.
That's what's going to ask. That's exactly what's going to ask.
Don't burn it. Give it to a poor person. Now, that doesn't help on your chametz, because the poor person also has to keep chametz. But Rabbi Yehuda says, give it to a poor person. Right. Don't give it to a rich person. He can buy new fruits. But give it to a poor person.
Right.
It'll stay within the spirit of what Shemitah was meant to do in the first place.
Right.
So give it to a poor person.
It's been stripped. Did he have to be Jesus?
So, yes.
Okay.
Yes. But give it to a poor person, and this way it's you fulfilled your bior, you've gotten rid of it, and he's good. Rabbi Yossi says, why only a poor person? Just give it to someone, anybody.
Right.
Poor person or a rich person. As long as you got rid of it and you showed I'm not hoarding it, give it to anybody. And Rabbi Yossi. So the Kesef Mishnah says, where did the Rambam get from this dispute that you have to destroy it from the world? So the Kesef Mishnah does something, maybe he had a different version. He says, it seems to me that the Rambam must have had this dispute. Rabbi Yehuda says, give it to a poor person. And Rabbi Yossi says, you can't give it to anybody.
Oh.
Instead of him being more lenient than Rabbi Yehuda, he has Rabbi Yossi being more stringent than Rabbi Yehuda, and we usually pass him like Rabbi Yossi. It's interesting, but it's because Mishnah can make a years of change that we don't have. Maybe he had a version of the dispute. But what I'm told is by people who actually live in Israel over the Biur date, because I was in Israel my year during the Shemitah year, but then the Biur doesn't apply during the Shemitah year. The Biur applies the year after the Shemitah year. So what I'm told is what people do is they do like Shalach Manus. They give it to their neighbor. I give my Shemitah products to my neighbor, and he gives me all of his Shemitah products. And we make like Shalach Manus.
You're taking Rabbi Yossi.
And plus, what they do first is they make it hefker. So that might even fulfill Rabbi Yossi.
Right.
And what they do is they make declared ownerless. They call out the street. Okay, this big wagon full of Shemitah fruit is now ownerless. Whoever wants, come and get it. So according to the Shulchan Aruch, you yourself can go back and take it afterwards. As long as you declared it ownerless.
You can't come back and take
it. I know. It doesn't. That's
not asking.
That's what the custom is, that you let your neighbor take what you left out, you take what he left out. One time, a person came over to my house for lunch on Shabbos and brought Shemitah wine.
Oh, how do you know? How do you know?
It said on the back of it. It said on the back of the wine bottle. This is a Shemitah, this wine made from grapes from Shemitah. But here's the problem. He held on to it for 2 years. he had it. It was a year or two after Shemitah that he brought it to me. So there's supposed to be big warnings on these bottles that say, be careful. You know,
what happens with aged wine? Nobody sells wine that's only 3 years.
So what do they do in Israel? I'll just, the Shemitah ideas, the etzos of how to deal with it. The fact is that 2,000 years ago, the Yishuv in Israel also needed commerce and agriculture. You know, when the Jews first came to Israel in the 1850s, 1860s, 1870s, they asked these questions: What can we do? You know, if we have to go the whole year without crops, without, you know, the Torah itself asks this question. It said, what are we going to do in the seventh year? As the seventh year approaches, what are we going to eat in the eighth year? Even worse, if it's a Yovel year, we have 2 years in a row with this standard. The 49th year is multiple of 7 and the 50th year. So Hashem says something that's irrational. I'll bless your crops. I'll bless your crops in the sixth year to produce for 3 years. Now that, you know, a man of faith can rely on that, but we don't live in such a time now. Right, you see manifestation. There are books, there are beautiful books written about, you know, how people who kept the Shemitah year were blessed with that, you know, beautiful.
Yeah, but then when the idol temples do it with Sharia,
it's the same situation now. So the Yishuv was threatened by this. So they came up with certain ideas early on, right? How to navigate the new Yishuv that was coming to Israel in the end of the 19th century, and they asked great rabbis who were living in Europe what to do. Some gave them the idea of selling the land to someone who is not an idolater, which would be a Muslim, and then repurchasing it. Now that's my segue for what we do next week. I just want to close out and review everything we did today.
What would you do with the bottle?
I lost it. Especially if I'm giving it away to someone. No,
I gave it to him. Awesome.
Yeah. The Jew, we didn't see a problem. We didn't use it. It should have been. So I asked him, are you aware that this is there's something called Eden, that would be your was.
Right.
So I asked, you know, I was trying to figure out without embarrassing him, right, if he was mafkirit or maybe So there is an etza. There is an etza. And if you declare it ownerless, That fulfills the beaver obligation according to some. So that might work. He didn't declare such a thing. All right. So I'll close with the question of is it a mitzvah to actually eat Shemitah products? There are some things that qualify as a mitzvah in the Torah that maybe I shouldn't be doing anyway. Right. So for instance, I'm supposed to give a Kohen my firstborn animals. Right? Of a goat, sheep, and an ox. Firstborn male animal. I'm supposed to give to a Kohen as a gift. Right? But the Torah also says I have to give the firstborn of a donkey. Chamor also, even though it's not kosher. Right? And the animals bear sanctity, but how can a donkey have sanctity? It's not even kosher. So what does the Torah say to do if you have a firstborn donkey?
Mm-hmm.
You redeem it with a sheep.
Oh, right.
Tifteh b'seh.
Right.
So you redeem it with a sheep. Okay, and you give the Kohen a sheep.
Right.
And now you can use your donkey. Otherwise, you're not allowed to use it, you're not allowed to ride it, you're not allowed to, it's sanctified.
Right.
So, but what if the person doesn't have a sheep or doesn't want to redeem the sheep? What does he have to do? Lo tifteh ba'arafto. You have to kill the donkey. And you can't even use it. You can't even give it to your pet lion. You can't use it for anything. Peter Hamor that was killed is very prohibited in halacha. It's no value, like chametz on Pesach. Mm. So the question is, if for some reason this person who has a firstborn male donkey, doesn't have the wherewithal or doesn't want to redeem it, is it now a mitzvah? So the Rambam paskins, yes, the Rambam counts one of the 613 mitzvahs. If you don't redeem the donkey, you have to kill it.
Yeah.
The Rambam counts it as one of the 600. The Ravid disagrees sharply. The Ravid says, what are you talking about? we don't want to do this. This is not a thing we should want. The Torah gives it as an Eitzah, but I don't want to do this.
Right, isn't there eventually a risk that...
Yes, I said, so I'll tell you, the Rambam is mashma from the Mishnah. Because the Mishnah says, mitzvahs, Pedia kodem mitzvahs arifa. That's how it's said. Arifa. And then it says mitzvahs chalitza kodem mitzvahs yibum. Why? Because the men were not doing yibum for the right reason, and then you're marrying your sister and what's the mitzvah. So they said, so everyone agrees that chalitza is a mitzvah to do. So too, arifa is a mitzvah to do.
It's hard to say the language.
Basically, yeah. Huh?
So what is the Ravid say?
So the question, the Ravid says that it said, don't count it as one of the 613 mitzvahs.
Yeah,
oh, how do you explain that? Yeah, he just says that it's a way out. It's something you need to do now in order to not be in violation, but it shouldn't lift it up to be one of the 613 mitzvahs. So here is the question. The Torah says, I have given you this food to eat for you and your animals. Sounds like a mitzvah. Looks like a mitzvah. Smells like a mitzvah. Sounds like I've given you this food for you to eat. Now you can argue all food is for you. God gives us to eat. We make a bracha. Now it's yours. You know? So this is a similar debate of what I just said with the donkey and a similar debate.
Okay.
In other words, there are some things I don't want to do. Mara says, if you don't get along with your wife, you should divorce her. I don't want to do that. I don't want to not get along with her.
Right?
Yeah, right. Okay, so that's what you... That's,
why would you... Okay. I'm sorry. Why would you want to tell me the time? Okay?
You shouldn't want to. You're right. But if you don't give the coin, it's cheap. To it could be a female sheep, it's not dealing with your firstborn male, but any sheep, then you this is your fine, so to say. I'm giving you a knas.
You have to kill the donkey?
And you have to kill the donkey. But the question is, does that now count as a mitzvah? So there are some mitzvahs in the Torah I don't want to do. I don't want to take my wife to make her drink the potion because she I don't want to take my son to, So what Howard mentioned, I'll close with this, is the difference between two types of mitzvahs. There's a mitzvah kiyumis and the mitzvah chiyuvis. Mitzvah chiyuvis means you have to make sure sometime in your life or on a regular basis or when a mitzvah shows up to do this mitzvah.
Right.
So mitzvah kiyumis to a mitzvah chiyuvis, I'm sorry, to eat matzah on the first night of Pesach and to eat maror on the first night of Pesach.
Right.
But there's something also called a mitzvah kiyumis. Kiyumis means you can go your whole life without this. It's only a mitzvah given certain circumstances. I'll give you a test. Ready? Mezuzah. Chiyuvis or kiyumis? To put up a mezuzah.
In theory,
it's kiyumis. Why?
You could have run that fire.
You can live outdoors. You could live in a cave.
Or a tent.
Mm-hmm. You wouldn't have to put up a mezuzah for your whole life. You get it? Tefillin is a mitzvah chiyuvis. You have to wear tefillin. Tzitzis is only a mitzvah if you have a four-cornered garment. Then you have to put tzitzis on. So the difference is between the mitzvah chiyuvis and the mitzvah kiyuvis. See it? Okay. All right. But now I'm just we're doing this to learn this just to get to exercise our brains about different types of mitzvahs. Okay, so that's going to close us out for today. Next week, I'm going to deal with five different eitzes, five different ways to deal with the so that preferably what Shemitah is that I can go into everybody's land and just take what I need for this week, next week, and once, you know, for the food I need, you know, bit by bit. Because I can't come in and take a whole lot. You know, now we store food in our houses. I mean, we bought cereal for the next two months. We bought fiber one, and we have enough. Like, we have four boxes, and we have a place, Baruch Hashem, to store it. But at that time, you didn't have a place to store food. The vermin would devour it. Right. They used to store food with books because it's high Kodesh, high Kodesh. The vermin would eat the way at the books. So they made a takana that your hands become tummy if it touches the tanach. So you shouldn't store Shemitah, Truma with it. Okay. All right. So that'll cover us today.
Could you use the flame that you're burning the Shemitah with or like warm the house or something?
Interesting. The fact that's only something you could do with truma.
Right, and that's what I'm asking.
The special rule of truma, that you burn truma, you can use it. If you have truma dipped in truma oil, you can use it for fuel.
So the flame of...
Not yet.
Okay. Excellent.
That was good. Okay, everybody. Great. All right. Trevor, be well, everybody.
Nothing I would say in Israel
very
Shemitah.
It's
too complicated.
Yeah, it was my year in Israel was a Shemitah year.
Well, I had a friend, he said we mastered everything.
Yeah.
You know, master, eventually, because he was going to recover all the sheet cups, he literally couldn't live. He had to leave because he couldn't do literally nothing to eat.
Well, that flies in the face because, you know, especially if Shemitah products become very expensive in Israel, right? That just it ruins the whole flavor of what the mitzvah was for. The mitzvah was meant to make it easy to eat in a Shemitah year. It's supposed to be easier to eat in a Shemitah year than a non-Shemitah year. So if it becomes more burdensome, more difficult.